effective sales call should begin with an honest appointment. That is, one which speaks plainly and directly to exactly what you want to talk about. So don't bust trust by asking a potential referral source for an appointment to catch up, if what you really want is to discuss if there may be any opportunities to do business together. And don't set yourself up to make things uncomfortable later on by asking for 20 minutes with a current or past client to talk about their current case, if what you really want to do is to see if there's a way to help them with a specific new problem or opportunity that you've learned about through the grapevine or in the newspaper. I've read plenty of books that will tell you how to get an appointment every time by various tricks like these. But making it rain is serious business, and you don't have time to waste on a sales call unless it's going to be with someone who knows ahead of time and has agreed to meet with you for a definite purpose. And speaking of time, you may have noticed that in one of the examples I just gave, we only asked for 20 minutes. That's because, if done right, a truly effective sales call should only take you about 20 minutes. And here's how it goes. There's just four parts: the opening, problem identification, exploring solutions, and the close. And you know, this isn't supposed to be some kind of an exact formula that you need to make yourself crazy trying to memorize. I think by the time we get done discussing each of the steps, you'll agree it's just a handy way to organize your thoughts in order to make the most out of your 20 minutes with a prospective client or potential referral sources. Believe me, I've been on some pretty effective sales calls that didn't go exactly according to plan, and I've come away empty-handed from others that went in exactly the order we're going to talk about. But for the most part, from my own experience and the experience of some great rainmakers with whom I've worked, by having the following outline in mind, it has reduced our stress and dramatically improves results. First step, the opening. Upon his arrival, Sam's sales call observes the same social niceties as everyone else. This helps to build rapport. But because of the way he asked for the appointment in the first place, both Sam and the prospective client or referral source know exactly why they're at the meeting, so the chit-chat is kept to a minimum. And while Sam and his prospective client may very well someday end up being friends, he's there this time on professional business, so the chit-chat is non-political and Sam avoids subjects that have the potential to divert the conversation off into la-la land. I was once on a sales call with a colleague who tried to build rapport by commenting on the baseball team whose mementos decorated the prospect's office. Well, wouldn't you know it, apparently the team had recently made some decisions with its roster that the prospect didn't exactly approve of, and so we wasted the next 20 minutes talking baseball instead of trying to help find a solution to a very real problem the prospect was struggling with. Of course, the firm that ultimately did get the business, they didn't get to learn much about the prospect's feelings about baseball, but I later found out they did learn a lot about the problem and the prospect's previous attempts to solve it. As a general rule, the opening should only last a couple of minutes, just long enough for you to break the ice, confirm that the 20 minutes you originally asked for are still available, and propose an agenda for the meeting. Some clients don't have problems, only opportunities. So I always like to suggest in the agenda that since I've already reviewed their website and have done my homework to become generally familiar with their business, that we spend a few minutes so they can tell me more about their business in their own words, I'll tell them very briefly about my own firm, and that we try to focus most of our time together to discuss the problem or opportunity that we previously talked about when we scheduled the appointment, and hopefully come up with a plan for a solution. Of course, variations of this proposed agenda can be easily articulated for any practice area. Remember though, it's only a proposed agenda. Be sure to wait for agreement. You wouldn't be the first rainmaker to go out on a sales call to discuss one problem and then be pleasantly surprised when the prospect shoots down the agenda you're suggesting and proposes something even better. Step 2, problem identification. Important problems exist in multiple dimensions, and very often they are embarrassing, potentially even damaging for the person who has them. So the sensitive rainmaker goes out of his or her way to make it clear that everything will be kept strictly confidential. Since you plan to keep everything confidential anyway, Why not just go ahead and clear the air? I've seen physical relief in the faces of my prospects when I take the time to reassure them that everything we're going to talk about will be kept on a strictly confidential basis. Intellectually, they may have known it already, but emotionally, many people with important problems need the reassurance. And once given, they often become very open to some highly productive discussions. The three dimensions in which most important problems exist are time, money, and reputation. Until you understand the problem in terms of each of these three dimensions, you've repeated it back, and the prospect has agreed that you've got it, chances are you probably don't. And you shouldn't worry if this part of the meeting takes a while. Most likely it will. Just remain cognizant of the time. And if you see you're running out of it, but you're making progress, wait until the right moment and point out that when you originally scheduled the appointment, you only asked for 20 minutes of the prospect's time, and that although you noticed you're coming up on your 20 minutes, this is an important problem, you're happy to stay and keep working through it, but you just didn't want to be one of those people who asks for 20 minutes and then imposes on the other person's time too much. Don't worry about not being invited back. If you've identified an important problem, understand it in all of its dimensions, and are working towards making a solution, the prospect will either extend the time or invite you back for a time certain. Remember, though, you can't help someone solve a problem unless you know what it is. Which brings us to step 3, exploring solutions. Now that you understand the problem or opportunity in all of its dimensions, it's time to use your common sense and find out about any great ideas that have been tried before and failed before we go ahead and suggest them again. Not only do we want to know what was tried before, but it is tremendously valuable to know who suggested it and how that worked out. On a sales call with the husband and wife, president and vice president of a small chain of retail stores that would ultimately file for bankruptcy, a former colleague of mine once got a flash of inspiration and suggested, he even sketched out a diagram for a solution that seemed to me to be brilliant. Turns out, it seemed like a pretty good idea before when previous counsel suggested it too. But for a bunch of reasons that we soon got to hear all about, the idea didn't solve the problem and we didn't get the business. Point is, don't miss the opportunity to learn from the prospect's previous mistakes instead of your own. Okay, once you've identified the problem, understand it in all of its dimensions, know what's been tried before and how each of those attempts worked out, it's time to put on your creative thinking cap and come up with a plan for a solution. Notice, I didn't say solve the problem, just a plan that will ultimately lead to a solution. Of course, if the problem is something so simple as, let's say, we don't know if the law allows us to give all our assets to our children and then file for bankruptcy protection the next day, and you happen to know the answer, you certainly don't need to drag things out. But in almost all cases, important problems cannot be solved without a series of steps. And about the most you can realistically expect to accomplish in a sales call is to suggest a series of steps that will logically lead to a solution, and then help your prospective client to weigh their options and pick a course of action. Which brings us to the closing. Now that you understand what the problem is, understand it in all of its dimensions, and have reached an agreement with the prospect as to which steps will be taken to reach a solution, it's time to close the meeting. And to do that, all you need to do is get the answers to 3 simple questions. Who is going to do what by when? I'll head back to my office to research that point and get back to you with an answer by the end of tomorrow. So you're going to call your accountant and ask him to send me the documents by the end of the week. I understand now isn't the right time to bring this issue to the board's attention. May I please have permission to contact your office again at the end of the quarter to schedule a follow-up appointment? These are all perfectly legitimate ways to close a sales call because they leave the door open for you to follow through with precision or come back at a time certain. It's never fun to do, but okay, so I'll never call you again in my life also qualifies as a better close than many I've seen where no one is really sure what is or isn't supposed to happen next. Of course, the goal is to close the sales call with a new client who will pay for your services. For many reasons that are far beyond the scope of this program, too many lawyers are uncomfortable when it gets down to converting a prospective client into a paying client. The sentiment seems to be that as long as they're just a prospective client, we can avoid the pain and embarrassment of being rejected. One of my favorite quotes is, "A ship in a harbor is safe, but that is not what ships are for." In other words, in order to make it rain, you're sooner or later going to have to face the ultimate question. Do you trust me enough to sign an engagement letter and give me your money? Having been on both sides of this question many times myself, I can assure you, it's harder for the person asking than for the one with an important problem that has finally found a lawyer who understands the problem in all of its dimensions and has laid out a plan for how to solve it. Trust me when I tell you, most clients are far more comfortable talking about money and the prospect of paying for your valuable legal services than you are about asking them to do so.